Good morning.
Morning, Sensei.
Well, this morning I'm going to speak about compassion, and particularly because I left last week. I may have been wrong, but there might be somewhat of a misunderstanding about what compassion is and how it works. So one definition of compassion is to suffer together. The feeling that arises when we are confronted with another's suffering and we are motivated to relieve that suffering. Now, the key part of that statement is it's not just feeling somebody's suffering. It's taking action to help relieve that suffering. So I underline the word action. It's not passive. It should be practiced with wisdom, but it's not passive. So just a brief little bit about Buddhist mythology. A bodhisattva is a being who has given up living life just for themselves and lives their life in service of others. And in Chinese mythology, Avalokiteshvara is called the bodhisattva of compassion, the one who listens to the cries of the world and uses skillful means to relieve that suffering. And the bodhisattva ideal is patiently accepting the world as it is, yet being deeply committed to making it better. So it's the total engagement in the world around us, and full participation in the immediate circumstances. Now, bodhisattvas are not on pedestals. Each one of us can be a bodhisattva, and it's a good bet that many of us are bodhisattvas. And to act as a bodhisattva, we act within our own particular conditions. For example, a bodhisattva could be a frontline health worker who is there to relieve the suffering of others. So the part of the limitations that we each have and that limit the degree that we can be a bodhisattva is if we're a householder and we have a family and we have kids and we have a job, our age could limit the degree to which we can serve as a bodhisattva, our health, our experience, and so forth. So we can act in the form of a bodhisattva within the confines and constrictions of our own daily life. Now, there's something that I think is very important in terms of serving others and compassionate action, and that's self-compassion. We can't be at service to somebody else if we're burned out. And again, to go back to the healthcare workers, this is one of the things that comes up all the time with the hours that they put in and the extremely difficult circumstances under which they work. And the fact on a daily basis, they deal with life and death. And I was a social worker. One of the things that we always talked about was the taking care of ourselves so that we could better serve others. And that if we don't do that, it can lead to what's called compassion fatigue. So we must be straight with ourselves. We must be clear with ourselves before we step out and offer a hand to someone else. Now, the heart, the very heart of compassion is taking loving action or compassionate action. And in order to act in harmony with circumstances, we must have compassion that's guided by wisdom. The two go together and they're necessary. Both are necessary. And you recall that the Zen peacemaker tenets of not knowing and bearing witness, those are the first two of the three. And if we practice those, they provide the wisdom to act in a loving and compassionate way. So not knowing and bearing witness give us the clarity, the wisdom to act on behalf of someone else. And in all likelihood, it will be a way, an act of compassion, which doesn't make matters worse. Now, an important ingredient, I think, doesn't come up too much, but is karma. And I think this is a very important element in being clear when we take compassionate action. Now, a simple definition of karma is, and I like this a lot, it doesn't get into all the religious and Buddhist aspects of karma. But the definition that I like is, this is like this because that was like that. We could also look at it is that the future will be like that because of this right now and how we take care of this. So from the perspective of this is like this because that was like that, it's part of the way I'm going to look at the discussion of compassion. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump in probably over my head, but to use the current situation regarding the president fomenting violence and the attack on the Capitol building. So I'm going to use this for the purposes of discussing compassionate action. And I'm going to divide this event into three components. But we always remember that everything is interconnected. And so no one of these happens without the other. But just for discussion's sake, I'm going to make this division. These are being discussed in terms of what would be appropriate compassionate action and the difficulties that these circumstances present themselves, the difficulties that they present trying to determine what would be compassionate action in this particular situation. So the first question that I would ask is, who are these people? And while the mob was somewhat diverse, it seems like, and this is from reading and listening to the news shows, that the mob was somewhat diverse, but that there was a core group of white males. And they seem to all be, or most of them be, racist, anti-Semites, white nationalists, or Nazi sympathizers. And I would say on the surface of it, very difficult to think of offering compassion to human beings who have these characteristics and who've acted the way that they've acted. So the question becomes, how can karma help us see this more clearly? And the karma again is, this is like this because that was like that. So these play a part in understanding this view of karma and who these men are. And from what I've read and via the media, they mostly grew up with the same set of circumstances. They grew up in poverty. They're poorly educated. Many lived in violent households, physically abused, mentally abused, and sexually abused. Many carry anger, hatred, shame, and contempt because of these experiences. And they feel emasculated, rejected by society, and hopeless. And they hold women in low regard. So it is believed that these experiences explain their behavior and how Trump came to be their voice. Right? So again, this is like this, and that is like this is like this because that was like that. So after seeing the footage of them attacking the Capitol building and hearing that some of them plan to kidnap or harm members of Congress, how does compassion fit into this? So we've had a description of him and we look at their behavior. So the way I see this is taking compassionate action does not mean, first of all, excusing their behavior. You know, just because of what they suffered in the past is not an excuse for the behavior that happens presently. It may help us understand why, but it's not an excuse. I think that they should have to take responsibility for their actions and accept the penalty for their crimes. And that would be proportionate to the nature of what they did. And the penalties, because of the circumstances and their profound effect that they've had, will probably be the max for any given crime, any given offense. And so be it. But what about compassion? Where does compassion come in? So one example that I would offer would not take place directly. Compassionate action, given the nature of who they are, the circumstances, etc. I mean, we could have compassion internally for the suffering they've had that caused them to do this. But what would compassionate action be? Not internally. So one thing that I would say, one way to look at this is, compassionate action doesn't have to be direct. It might take the form of working towards addressing the issues of poverty, abuse, lack of education, as well as finding ways to provide mental health services to people, whether it's these people, well, not these people, but to address the circumstances which created the men that acted and behaved this way. Now, these people are going to go to prison, most of them. And so prison is another problem that contributes to this kind of mentality. And so another way to work would be to improve the conditions in prisons. And as you know, I've done prison work until the COVID crisis started. And it was really an interesting experience for me because we went there, and out of that going there, really unknown, a program to deal with inmates or to offer inmates was offered. And it was built around Zen practice, learning meditation. And also a very profound part of it was, I think it was 10 of the prisoners. They came and went, but there were about a group of 10 regulars. They all, over the course of 6 months, studied the precepts and took Jukai, that's the ceremony, to become Buddhists. And many of them were indeed affected by this kind of training. So this would be an example of how compassion might create conditions where some of these actions might not be repeated, even though the compassion for the individuals that acted out recently was not direct. Now, the most difficult, the second component of this is the president. And I found this the most difficult to see clearly how could we act in a compassionate way. So we know he primed the riot with lies and tweets, and then he directly told his followers to go down to the Capitol and fight to stop the greatest election fraud in history. And these were, without question, un-American actions with extreme consequences and in total violation of the Constitution and the law. And not only that, these actions affect our country and the world and are a threat to our national security. So this is a pretty horrific thing that he did amongst many, many over the course of 4 years. So again, if we say, okay, this is like this because that was like that, we find that he was born a child of privilege. He was treated horribly by his father, who was characterized as a dishonest, ruthless businessman. He was never held accountable for his behavior. He inherited wealth. It was saved several times from financial ruin by his father. But on the other hand, if you look at him, he seems to be a suffering soul to be living in that body, that kind of life, and mentally ill. So how do we act compassionately toward what I guess we would call such a horrific human being? I can't separate him, even though I was trying, I can't separate him from the victims. And so I was thinking, okay, so what would be a compassionate action? And one of the compassionate actions was to vote him out of office. I think it's compassionate, and it's compassionate for both him and for the people that he's harmed. In a sense, it's compassionate because it's saving him from himself, not only from the atrocities that he perpetrates, but it also, in a compassionate way, saves him from himself. And as I said, it's also saving everyone else throughout space and time from receiving more suffering. Now, because of his mental health state and his background, it's hard to imagine how he would receive any compassionate action. He's so closed down, cut off. I can't imagine what else could really be done for him. You could offer all sorts of compassionate opportunities, but because of the nature of him and because of his mental illness, he would refuse it and continue to suffer. So I was thinking, well, okay, I mean, that's the limit of it. And that happens with compassionate action. It's limited by the circumstances. And that's why it's important to see the circumstances clearly. The one little peak that I thought that was that Perhaps after he loses office, he has some sort of a mental collapse where all of these ego ways that he lives his life softened. Perhaps somebody could offer him compassionate intervention and help him in some way with his suffering. That's probably terribly optimistic. So the third part of this are all of the victims who have lived these 4 years and who were directly affected by his behavior. And I think that the election was a wonderful example of compassionate action. So many people united and stepped forward to work to elect a candidate who would be able to address a lot of the things that are going on in our country today. I won't list them because you all know what they are. But many people made calls, sent postcards, donated money, worked in their programs. These campaigns supported each other. There was a unified activity based on where the Democrats helped and supported each other. And then what a very beautiful example of compassionate action is Stacey Abrams and all the work that she did bringing people together to get out the vote. It was extraordinary, truly extraordinary. And again, it was an incredible act of compassionate action. And so because of her actions, many, many people are suffering less. And again, there are many other ways, but in terms of serving the people all of us who have been victims of Trump. But hopefully the new administration, which we have voted in, will also act in a compassionate way and create programs that eliminate suffering, undo a lot of the circumstances that have been created. Now, just quickly, there's sort of two levels that compassionate action takes place on. One is the macro level, and that's working for world peace, social justice, to eliminate poverty, to end all forms of discrimination, acting for human rights, everyone's right to health care, and those kinds of things. There's many more. But that's working, being a bodhisattva on a macro level. Okay, but bodhisattvas also work on the micro level. And, you know, that takes place in our everyday life in all different ways. It's helping somebody in distress, mowing the lawn of a sick neighbor, working in the community to get transportation for seniors, working at a community center to feed homeless people. All of those things are acts of compassion. And finally, I'd like to say, and this is, I think, very important, it's our practice. It's Zazen that helps us develop in a particular way to go deeper, to feel more connected, which allows us to more and more over time as we practice, open ourselves, open our hearts, and allow us to act in a compassionate way. Thank you.